Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. Welcome to Mad Money Machine Show 132, coming to you from a MacBook and GarageBand. Can you tell it's GarageBand with the Magic GarageBand music that I've selected to play in the background? Yes, it is correct. I got a new MacBook and new GarageBand, and you can hear the ducking at work when I stop talking. The music comes up a lot louder, and when I start talking again, the music goes down to where you can't almost hear it. Well, I'm loving the new MacBook. It's a 13-inch. It's not the MacBook Pro. It's just the cheapy MacBook. The new aluminum case. It is a solid notebook, a very nice notebook. I love most everything about it. I just got to figure out how to use the Mac operating system. Warren Buffett says it's time to buy American stocks. Do you agree with him? Maybe it's time for him to buy American stocks, or maybe it's time for you to buy his American stocks. But I don't know that Warren Buffett knows everyone's risk capacity, right? And why just American stocks, by the way? Why not stocks of all countries around the world, international emerging markets? And why not bonds, Warren Buffett? Isn't it time to buy bonds, too?
Mad Money Machine is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios.
I would like to thank everybody who voted for the Mad Money Machine podcast out at podcastawards.com. Mad Money Machine is proud to be nominated at podcastawards.com. But strangely, not in the business category, like I had hoped. Instead, the Mad Money Machine podcast was nominated in Best Mobile Phone Formatted Podcast. And I don't know why, but I sure do thank you. So if you're listening to the Mad Money Machine on a mobile phone, please go out to podcastawards.com and vote for the Mad Money Machine to win Best Mobile Phone Formatted Podcast. What a strange nomination, but I'll take it. Thank you so much. Anyway, well, with the market down some 40% year to date, what kind of gain do we need to get back to even? Well, if you calculate it all up, it's something like 66% gain now to get back to where we were at the start of the year, assuming you were in the highest risk portfolio and all that. And if you calculate that up, how long would it take at 15% annualized return to get to the 66%? Of course, then you got to subtract away inflation, and who knows what rate inflation is going to run in the time that it takes to get back to even. You'll really need to add in the gain of your investments above inflation in order to get back to even. So bottom line, it's going to take a whole long time to get to back to where we started the year, unless the market vaults up like it did after the previous recession, 2002-2003, or after the 1973-74 stock market slide recession. In 75, it vaulted up some 45% all in 1 year. Is it going to happen this time? Who knows? Well, a lot of people are talking about gold, and there is this strange conundrum that's happening in the gold market, and that is the difference between the COMEX futures gold price and the American Eagle 1 ounce gold coin prices. For example, if you take a look, I think today the 1 ounce of gold in the futures market is something just below $800 an ounce. But go try to buy an American Eagle gold coin for just under $800 an ounce. You won't find it anywhere. In fact, on eBay and places, you know, the horrible marketplaces, you'll find them over $900. Even at A-Mark, the premium was $60 per ounce of gold coin. So you can tell a lot of people are worried about this discrepancy between the price of an ounce of gold in the futures market, the price of an ounce of gold in the coin market. And I don't think it's all that unusual, because you're talking about a format of the coin. You're talking about a physical medium that has a premium on it. in the shape of a coin. Now, you know how the smaller gold coins, the 1/10 of an ounce of gold coins, have an even higher premium than the 1 ounce gold coins. So it makes sense that an ounce has a higher premium than a big bundle of ounces, you know, several bricks worth of gold. And I don't see that we should be too concerned about the gold market being manipulated, although it could be in the futures markets somewhere. Well, what do we invest in? Jim Cramer, if we don't invest in gold, although Jim Cramer did say buy gold a few weeks ago, and I'm not sure that pick was very good in the short term. What else is Jim Cramer saying? Well, you remember when he called the bottom in the market back in July. How'd that work out for you? He is now saying buy stocks that have good dividends. And the thinking there is that if a stock or a mutual fund or an index fund has a pretty safe and high dividend, say 6%, if the stock price goes down, then whoever buys the stock at the lower price gets effectively an even higher dividend than on their stock. Now, assuming the company or the fund continues to pay the same amount in the dividend, and the quarterly dividend or the annual dividend, whatever it turns out to be, the percentage yield on your dividend can be higher if the stock price goes down. And so it sort of acts like a floor in some sense to the stock prices. Because if you get a stock that's paying a good solid 10% dividend, or like Southern Copper Corporation, last time I checked, was something like 13% or even 15% dividend, assuming they pay it, then my goodness, what an investment that could be, right? So we might have to start checking into dividends. I know a lot of investment advisors are looking for overseas dividends. For example, the Wisdom Tree International Small Cap Dividend Fund, ticker symbol DLS. It's come way down in the price of the fund, but the yield on the dividend, of course, naturally would go up. And I have to say, again, assuming that these companies still pay their dividends. If companies are coming into hard times, they may decide to cut their dividend payment to the shareholders. And that certainly indicates the company is in trouble. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the bubble. And for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Machine Show 132 is hedge fund manager Andrew Lade. What about all these hedge funds now that are losing money and are losing clients? And if you lose clients, you're going to lose your big commissions, your 2 and 20% commissions. Of course, the idea as a hedge fund manager is you're supposed to get 20% of the profits that you make for your investors. I wonder if they have to give back 20% of their losses. Wouldn't that be interesting? Well, anyway, maybe that's why Andrew Lade, L-A-H-D-E, of Lade Capital Management, or Lady, has written a letter saying that he has resigned. October 17th, I'm reading from the financialtimes.com, FT.com. He says, "Today I write not to gloat. Given the pain that nearly everyone is experiencing, that would be entirely inappropriate. Nor am I writing to make further predictions, as most of my forecasts in previous letters have unfolded or are in the process of unfolding." Yeah, right. "Instead, I'm writing to say goodbye." Recently on the front page of Section C of the Wall Street Journal, a hedge fund manager who was also closing up shop, a $300 million fund, was quoted as saying, "What I have learned about the hedge fund business is that I hate it." I could not agree more with that statement. I was in this game for the money, the low-hanging fruit, i.e. the idiots whose parents paid for prep school, Yale, and then a Harvard MBA was there for the taking. These people who were often truly not worthy of the education they received or supposedly received rose to the top of such companies as AIG, Bear Stearns, and Lehman Brothers, and all levels of our government. All of this behavior supporting the aristocracy only ended up making it easier for me to find people stupid enough to take the other side of my trades. God bless America. There are far too many people for me to sincerely thank for my success. However, I do not want to sound like a Hollywood actor accepting an award. The money was reward enough. Furthermore, the list is endless of those deserving thanks, and they know who they are." I will no longer manage money for other people or institutions. I have enough of my own wealth to manage. Some people who think they have arrived at a reasonable estimate of my net worth might be surprised that what I would call it quits with would be such a small war chest. That's fine. I'm content with my rewards. Moreover, I will let others try to amass 9, 10, or 11-figure net worths. Meanwhile, their lives suck. Appointments back-to-back, booked solid for the next 3 months. They look forward to their next two-week vacation in January, during which they will likely be glued to their BlackBerries or some other such devices. What's the point? They will all be forgotten in 50 years anyway. Steve Ballmer, Steve Cohen, and Larry Ellison will all be forgotten. I do not understand the legacy thing. Nearly everyone will be forgotten. Give up on leaving your mark. Throw the BlackBerry away and enjoy life. So this is it. With all due respect, I am dropping out. Please do not expect any type of reply to emails or voicemails within normal timeframes or at all. He says, I have no interest in any deals in which anyone would like me to participate. I truly do not have a strong opinion about any market right now other than to say that things will continue to get worse for some time, probably years. I am content sitting on the sidelines and waiting. After all, sitting and waiting is how we made money from the subprime debacle. I now have time to repair my health, which was destroyed by the stress I layered onto myself over the past 2 years, as well as my entire life, where I had to compete for spaces in universities and graduate schools, jobs and assets under management, with all those who had all the advantages, rich parents, that I did not. May meritocracy be part of a new form of government which needs to be established. On the issue of the U.S. government, I would like to make a modest proposal. First, I point out the obvious flaws, whereby legislation was repeatedly brought forth to Congress over the past 8 years, which would have reined in the predatory lending practices of now mostly defunct institutions. These institutions regularly filled the coffers of both parties in return for voting down all the legislation designed to protect the common citizen. This is an outrage, yet no one seems to know or care about it. Since Thomas Jefferson and Adam Smith passed, I would argue that there has been a dearth of worthy philosophers in this country, at least ones focused on improving government. Capitalism worked for 200 years, but times change and systems become corrupt. George Soros, a man of staggering wealth, has stated he would like to be remembered as a philosopher. My suggestion is that this great man start and sponsor a forum for great minds to come together and create a new system of government that truly represents the common man's interest, while at the same time creating rewards great enough to attract the best and brightest minds and blah, 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 blah. And then he goes on at the end, he recommends that the United States legalize the growing of hemp and then tax it. And he says, with all that, I say goodbye and good luck. All the best, Andrew Lade. And I say congratulations, not only for getting on with your life, but for being the guru on Madman Machine, show 132. So I asked you to vote for the Madman Machine at podcastawards.com. And speaking of voting, I guess we have a voting day coming up in a couple of weeks where we get to vote for various candidates for political office. And, you know, one thing that strikes me is various polls say that the approval rating of Congress is something like 9% or 8% of all the people they poll in the United States. Yet, all the incumbents get reelected. I wonder why that is. Do us all a favor when you go to the polling booth. I know I'm going to do this. Vote against your incumbent and tell others, hey, just vote against who's already in office. Let's make some change. You know, it's change we can believe in. I have taken a page out of Adam Curry's playbook and created an account at drop.io. And this one's called drop.io/madmoneymachine. And it is a place where you can comment or send a file or call in a voicemail message or paste in a YouTube video clip that you think is relevant to some topic on the Mad Money Machine. I know Adam Curry uses his at drop.io can't say it, drop.io/dailysourcecode. Mine will be drop.io/madmoneymachine. You can go and look and see what other people have dropped out there, and I'll be looking there from time to time to see if anybody's dropped anything. Now, I don't have nearly the size of an audience of Adam Curry. I'd say I have, what, 1/20th the size? So I'd expect to get 1/20th the amount of postings out at drop.io, which means maybe one a week, if that. Well, anyway, that's a new thing we've got going on here at the Mad Money Machine, is drop.io/madmoneymachine. Of course, all the other things are still in existence. You can email me, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. You can call the voicemail line, 206-734-4763. You can follow me at Twitter, twitter.com/madmoneymachine. Or, of course, read the website, madmoneymachine.com. Something new at marketwatch.com/lazyportfolio. Paul B. Farrell, who has been reporting on lazy portfolios for a lot longer than I have, has put together the total returns for 8 lazy portfolios, and it looks like, I think he keeps it updated, maybe, no, I think it's just static. He keeps track of the Aronson family taxable portfolio that has 11 funds in it. The one-year return, this is apparently not year-to-date, it's down 26.44%. Dr. Bernstein's Smart Money is down 22.48%. Coffee House is down 20.37%. Now, one thing I don't think he makes clear is what is the risk level of each of these different lazy portfolios. You know, it's kind of like comparing Red Delicious apples to Granny Smith apples, because you know, some of these portfolios have more bonds in them. Some of them have more risky emerging market funds. I know the he doesn't have Scott Burns' portfolio in here, but he has some off-the-wall things like the precious metals and also the Vanguard Energy Fund, which recently have stunk to high heaven. The precious metals and mining fund from Vanguard is down something like 60% from its peak. My goodness gracious, mining stocks have been hit with a triple whammy, I think, because not only metal price has gone down, but confidence in mining stocks has gone down, and the dollar has strengthened against international currencies where many of these mining companies are. So it's just boom, 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 beat those funds down. Maybe it's a good time to buy. But anyway, go out and check marketwatch.com/lazyportfolio. I'll have a link to it in the show notes to Mad Machine Show 132. In the Learning Earnings segment today, I'd like to take another look at 401k plans. There's an article by Chris Borden, who is a co-director of Kobo Wealth Conservancy and Family Office, a Honolulu-based registered investment advisory firm, and he provides advice on 401k plans. This article appeared in the Kansas City Business Journal from the Pacific Business News, Friday, September 19th, 2008. He says lawsuits targeting 401k plan sponsors are on the rise. Now, this is sponsors of 401k plans. He says a socioeconomic crisis looms as employee retirement savings fail to keep up with the rising costs of living and the increased life expectancy of our population. Plan sponsors can take 5 simple steps to help meet these challenges. Now, even if you're not a plan sponsor of a 401k plan, you might very well possibly be a plan member of a 401k plan. You might have a 401k plan. And so think about these challenges that the sponsors are facing to see if the same challenge is applying to the plan that you are invested in. For example, number one, he says retain a registered investment advisory firm. No surprise that many sponsors do not understand the full cost of maintaining a 401k plan for their employees. And using an advisory firm can help alleviate most of the headaches associated with hidden and excessive fees. All right, so the question then to turn around to ask then is, does your 401k plan use a registered investment advisory firm, or are there hidden fees? Number two, offer model portfolios in your 401k platform. Most 401k plans are participant-directed, meaning it's up to the employee to choose from a list of up to 60 mutual funds to construct his or her 401k investment portfolio. Well, the vast majority of employees are not suited to make such investment decisions. So, is there a model portfolio in your 401k plan? Number three, monitor fund performance and changes. Oh, you don't want to do that right now. Never mind. Don't look at your 401k statement just yet, please. Just kidding. Oh, well, they talk about looking at, you know, I guess this was kind of hard to do at these times, but look at the investment returns of various mutual funds and compare them to indexes or compare them to benchmarks. And if they've underperformed their benchmark, then think about changing the fund that's in there. Number four out of five, create and update an investment policy statement, which details the processes and procedures critical for a prudently and properly managed 401k plan. Well, have you seen a 401k plan investment policy statement? It should include four things: the asset classes to be included in the investment models, the due diligence process for selecting everything from investment choices to the 401k service providers, each service provider to the plan, its role and responsibilities, and the fiduciary status, if any, of providers of investment services of the plan. And the number fifth thing in the five simple steps to keep your 401k plan safe and well is to populate your 401k platform with, I'm going to say it, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? Index funds! Using passively managed index mutual funds and exchange-traded funds significantly improves the long-term investment results of your 401k plan, while allowing fiduciaries to understand the full cost to plan participants. Because passive index funds have very little trading of the underlying securities, the fund's expense ratio captures almost 100% of the true cost of the fund. In addition, the expense ratios of passive index funds range from 0.07% to 0.40%. Well, I've seen some higher. Significantly less than the all-in cost of actively managed mutual funds. And I'd give you one more tip. If you are a plan, a sponsor of a 401k plan, if you have a company, or if you're on the board of your company that's choosing your 401k plan, I would encourage you right now to consider IFA, Index Funds Advisors, to handle your company's 401k plan. These guys have it all down to a science. They can help each one of your employees with their best portfolio to handle their risk capacity. That's the Learning Earning segment. Brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. You'll never guess who's coming to town today. Barry O. Barack Obama is coming to my town today to speak at an outdoor speaking event. I think the thing kicks off at 5 o'clock. Am I going to go see it? Nah, I'll wait for the YouTube video, I guess. My sister and brother-in-law are going to go see him, so I hope they'll take some pictures and hear the wise words of our next president. But speaking of presidential politics, let me go now to a former presidential candidate whom you might remember, who's been on TV a whole lot these days to get his expert opinion about the financial crisis. Of course, I'm talking about Congressman from Texas, Ron Paul. He has he keeps writing about the current economic situation. He's written for the LouRockwell.com website recently. Just came out today, an article called "Too Big to Fail." He says, in the midst of highly unpopular bailouts of Wall Street, many justifications have been given about why Washington feels the need to act. Some claim that capitalism and the free market are to blame. But we've not had capitalism. If you compare our financial capital to our aggregate debt, this would be obvious. In the same way, we have not had a truly free market. The monetary manipulations of the Federal Reserve, a complex tax code, the many oversight agencies, and their mountains of regulations show that we are far removed from a free market economy. Another unsatisfying argument is that certain entities have to be bailed out because of their economic importance. Supposedly, some entities are so big, so important, that no matter what they do, citizens must perpetually sustain them. Even limited government has a basic duty to defend against force and fraud. Some argue that force is somehow permissible just because the entity engaging in it is, quote, economically significant. But one could use this reasoning to prop up slavery. It could be deemed unfortunate, but economically beneficial. And indeed, these arguments have been used historically to deprive people of their liberty. But slavery should never be tolerated, regardless of any economic benefit, just as systemic fraud should not be tolerated. Some banks on Wall Street should fail. Fannie and Freddie should fail. They are perpetuating fraud against the people. Yet government insists on rewarding behavior which should instead be investigated, prosecuted, and punished. There's been much evidence of fraud at Fannie and Freddie, but when one man, Franklin Raines, defrauded the organization out of millions of dollars through illegal accounting tricks and ends up agreeing to pay back just a fraction, one could argue that it was well worth it to him. Fannie went on to only get more deeply involved in the subprime mortgages after this investigation. Several organizations are suffering right now precisely because the free market is trying to work and punish mismanagement. If only the government would get out of the way and let it. Perhaps banks are not lending to each other because they know that complicated accounting standards created in part to defend against confiscatory tax policy enables false fiscal pictures to be presented, which erodes trust. But this is not a time for the government to step in with more burdensome and complicated regulations or more foolish liquidity injections. This is a time for some banks to fail and remaining banks to deal honestly and transparently once again. More regulations will only result in more lies. Just as economies that turned away from slave labor had a transition period, and our economy would transition as well, but in the end, if we turned to honest, sound money and a truly free market, we would end up with a more just society, founded on truthfulness and decency, not subject to the violence of force or the whims of fraudulent institutions. Unfortunately, it seems we're headed into a new era of slavery, however, where all taxpayers will be forced to render to the Fed and big banking interests the bulk of the fruits of their labor, possibly through higher taxes, but definitely through the eroding force of inflation. Right on, Ron Paul. Right on. My goodness gracious, can you imagine if the Republican primaries had not been held yet? This might be a different world. I mean, not to say that he would get any more credit for anything, but I mean, at least he would be able to talk about the arguments with the other candidates. I guess only in this case, John McCain, not Barack Obama so much. But we really need to get a third-party candidate in the debates against these other two guys to talk about stuff like this. Well, these are unprecedented times. There's one more thing I'd like to show you. If you'd go out to IFA.com and click on the 100 in a red circle there, bring up the IFA portfolios / P100 page. And in those red tabbed boxes, click on the second one from the left called Rolling Periods. And what you'll see there is a list of the highest performing periods and the lowest performing periods for the index portfolio 100. And for 1 year period, for 12 consecutive months, any 12 consecutive months over the history that they look at this, back to 1958, I think it looks like, or perhaps before that. The lowest rolling period return for the index portfolio 100 is -35%. And that was from October 73 through September of 74. Well, if you go look out at the actual performance of index portfolio 100 year to date, you might notice that it is currently at -37.63%. And when October, if things hold the way they are through the end of this month, October, we might set a new rolling 12-month low return period on index portfolio 100 and possibly many of the other portfolios. I'm not going to check them. Second thing I'd like for you to click on then in the tabs is the one called the Returns Matrix. That's the fourth one from the left in the red tabbed area. And you'll see a big matrix showing a lot of returns between different years in Index Portfolio 100. And this one starts at year boundaries, so at the beginning of January through the end of December of a particular year. Notice again that this -38-some% of Index Portfolio 100 might set a new record since 1973 for the lowest return in a calendar year. So we're living in interesting times, to say the least. Well, this is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes being in GarageBand, on a MacBook, in the basement, to make a mad money machine. I'll see you in a week, or a little bit more, maybe. Thank you very much for joining me. I hope you'll visit Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com, because they'll help match you with a risk-appropriate portfolio. The music on this program provided by music.podshow.com and some provided by GarageBand. I appreciate your feedback. I appreciate your votes at podcastawards.com. Let's win this thing for best mobile formatted podcast. And send me email, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Call the voicemail line, 206-734-4763. And visit the new drop.io/madmoneymachine. I'll see you next time. Stay invested, because risk is the source of returns.